Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not the best person in the world at self-promotion. That must be obvious to you by now. I mean, I'm bragging about it. But I noticed that I've forgotten on the last 400 or so episodes of this program to mention at the end, in addition to my appearance on Blue Sky and Substack, I have a YouTube channel, and it's, you know, pretty darn good. You'll get to see the entirety of Nixon's The One, the television series I did for British television a bit ago, based on the Nixon tapes. Some amazing performances by New Orleans piano players, which I recorded during COVID because people couldn't go out to nightclubs. I shouldn't call them nightclubs. And other stuff, a lot of other stuff. So check it out when you get a chance. It's my YouTube channel. Imagine that. And, of course, we are now well into 2026. I gave some thought to printing up a bunch of T-shirts that said F2025. If you have any interest in one, give me a holler on Blue Sky, and maybe we'll print them up. Who knows? I know. Let's talk about microplastics and mice. Yes, mice. Microplastics may be burrowing into arteries and triggering heart disease, especially in mice, especially in men. According to a new study, tiny plastic particles varying in size from about a thousandth of a millimeter to 5 millimeters, we all know what those are ubiquitous today, present in food, water, and air, according to The Independent. They're known to enter the bloodstream and even lodge in vital organs. They're implicated in a range of health conditions, from hormonal disruption, impaired reproduction, neurological damage, cancer, and heart ailments. But that's not all. In the case of heart diseases, it remains unclear whether these particles actually damage arteries or simply accompany the disease. Everybody needs a friend. Quote, our study provides some of the strongest evidence thus far that microplastics may directly contribute to cardiovascular disease, not just correlate with it. That's according to Changcheng Zhu, professor of biomedical sciences at UC Riverside, author of a new study published in Environmental International. I read the domestic version. Quote, the surprising sex-specific effect harming males but not females could help researchers uncover protective factors or mechanisms that differ between men and women. In the latest study, researchers assessed the effects of microplastics on mice. See, I knew mice was going to come into this. Mice that are genetically prone to developing atherosclerosis. I guess they've been smoking. Both the male and female study mice were fed a low-fat, low-cholesterol diet comparable to what a lean and healthy person might consume. If that person was a mouse. No. Now, over 9 weeks, the mice received microplastics at doses of about 0.0016 ounces per pound of their body weight. Scientists chose that exposure level to reflect amounts similar to what humans could encounter through contaminated food and water. I like me some contaminated. Although the microplastic diet did not cause the mice to gain weight or raise their cholesterol levels, and the animals remained lean, there was artery damage. Researchers particularly found a striking difference in the effect of microplastics between the male and female mice. Microplastic exposure greatly accelerated atherosclerosis in male mice, with plaque buildup increasing by 63%. In the portion of the main artery connected to the heart, and by over 7 times in the brachial cephalic artery branching from the main artery in the upper chest. It's my favorite artery. Female mice exposed to the same conditions did not experience a significant spike in plaque formation, according to this study. So if you're going to be a mouse in your next life, try to be a babe. Hello, welcome to the show. We'll be right back. from New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show, celebrating the new king of the world, or at least the new king of Venezuela. And now, ladies and gentlemen, yeah, it sounds like real music, doesn't it? Not a musician in the room. And the singer sounds real too, except, as you'll hear, she doesn't know how to pronounce sycophantic.
If your chatbot is a shrink, it might just be time to think. You could be getting unduly frantic, 'cause the body's being too sacrificing. If your chatbot is a shrink, it might be driving you to drink. Your condition just may worsen, 'cause you think you're talking to a person. If your chatbot
That's good advice from your chatbot. A recent investigation by a Tel Aviv-based security firm called Koi, they're cute fish too, uncovered a massive data harvesting operation tied to a voluntary extension on Google's Chrome browser called Urban VPN Proxy. The free extension, well, it's free, has some 6 million users at the time of this piece appearing in futurism.com, and even a featured badge on the Chrome Web Store, an endorsement from Google itself. But as Koi researcher Idan Dardikman writes, the extension goes beyond the actions of a typical VPN. Packed under the hood are executor scripts. No, he doesn't read your will. Designed to intercept and capture conversations from the leading AI platforms. Your ChatGPT, your Claude, your Gemini, your DeepSeek, and your Grok. The data collected encompasses anything a user might ask their chosen AI chatbot, including medical questions, financial details, proprietary code, personal dilemmas, sold for marketing analytics purposes. See, AI doesn't really change that much about our world. Marketing wins. Regardless of whether the VPN is on or off, Urban VPN Proxy is constantly scraping conversation data. The script is enabled by default. So from the moment someone downloads the extension, their chatbot gabbing is fair game. Worse yet, there is no user facing toggle to disable this. The only way to stop the data collection is to uninstall the extension. The company behind the thing, Urban Cyber Security Incorporated, isn't that shy about this. As Dardikman observes, the company's privacy policy explicitly says, we share the web browsing data with our affiliated company, a data broker called ByScience, with an I, not a UI, that uses this raw data and creates insights, which are commercially used and shared with business partners. Unquote. Despite this, the page on the Chrome Web Store for this device declares that your data is not being sold to third parties outside of the approved use cases and not being used or transferred for purposes that are unrelated to the item's core functionality. The revelation might be startling for the 6 million users of Urban VPN Proxy. It's not the only app running this scheme. Forbes magazine notes there are over 2 million customers across 7 additional apps by the same publisher, each with identical AI harvesting functionality. It's harvesting, but it's not it is international. But all but one of them carry a featured badge in the Chrome Web Store. As the COI researcher writes, if you have any of these extensions installed, uninstall them now, assume any AI conversations you've had since July 2025 have been captured and shared with third parties. What's wrong with sharing? The Washington Post has been experimenting with AI, and some things have gone sideways, according to Status. Earlier this year, not the only ones, earlier this year, Bloomberg rolled out AI-generated summaries of topics to articles, a feature that introduced factual errors into at least three dozen article pages. The LA Times, yes, there's still one, unveiled an insights feature that immediately sympathized with the Ku Klux Klan. And earlier this month, Business Insider started using an AI bot to write full-fledged stories, which already produced at least one story that required a correction. Our friend Gary Marcus reports today that ChatGPT cannot be trusted with breaking news. He's quoting the executive editor at Wired, Brian Barrett, who asked ChatGPT and Perplexity about whether Maduro had been captured. Both had fumbled the news, though not Claude or Google. Barrett wanted to know why. According to him, ChatGPT emphatically refuted that Maduro had been captured at all. Quote, that didn't happen. The United States has not invaded Venezuela, and Nicolas Maduro has not been captured. It then, unquote, and then rationalized, explaining that confusion can happen because of sensational headlines, social media misinformation, and confusing sanctions, charges, or rhetoric with actual military action. Unquote. All of this was fabrication. At that point, the underlying large language model is not on its own capable of going to the New York Times, Reuters, the Associated Press, or any other reputable organization that had already reported the story. They're not trained to go to the wire services to catch up. Perplexity, according to Barrett, was similarly scolding. Quote, the premise of your question is not supported by credible reporting or official records. There has been no invasion of Venezuela by the United States that resulted in capturing Nicolas Maduro. In fact, the U.S. has not successfully invaded or apprehended Maduro, and he remains the Venezuelan president as of late 2025. Of course, this isn't late 2025. It continues, if you're seeing sensational claims, they likely originate from misinformation or hypothetical scenarios rather than factual events. Unquote. Accurate reporting already existed by the time Barrett posed his queries to the system. Perplexity missed it, made an error, and wrongly blamed the user. Why? Large language models, explains Marcus, are inevitably stuck in the past, tied to when they are trained and deeply limited in their inherent abilities to reason, search the web, think critically, you know, that stuff. The unreliability of LLMs in the face of novelty is one of the core reasons, says Marcus, why businesses shouldn't trust large language models or chatbots. And if the AI boom turns out to be a bubble and bursts, as some analysts predict, the energy gusher could dry up just as fast as it has opened. That is the electricity being harvested. There's that word again, to feed the data centers. And if that happens, says Axios, billions of dollars of stranded assets would occur. You don't want your assets stranded, do you? And mentions of AI bubble rose 880% since last quarter's investor calls, according to AlphaSense. We started talking about it. Just about then, maybe earlier. AI is great. It's cold in the Northeast. It was cold here in New Orleans for a minute. But not as cold as the crypto winter. Trust Wallet users lost more than $7 million shortly after it released an updated version of its extension for the Chrome web browser. There's that Chrome web browser again. The stolen funds will be reimbursed, says Changpeng Zhao, co-founder of crypto exchange Binance, which owns Trust Wallet. The breach, flagged Christmas Day by Detective Zach XBT, was confirmed by the wallet team. Yes, there's a team behind wallets. It's not just... The Flow Foundation announced last week that it is investigating a potential security incident affecting its Layer 1 blockchain, prompting major South Korean exchanges to halt token transfers that triggered a sharp sell-off in the Flow token. They all got tokens. It's a token of their esteem. No, it's not. The Flow Foundation is currently investigating a potential security incident affecting the Flow network, the team wrote on X. Our engineering teams are actively collaborating with network partners to mitigate the issue. We'll provide further verified updates just as soon as they're available. That's a quote. The on-chain analyst Waz, all the names are great in that world, aren't they? First flagged what appears to be the exploit shortly after the price crash, estimating that around $4 million was stolen. And that's Trump money. According to Waz's analysis, an attacker used a wallet created approximately 6 months ago to mint millions of wrapped Flow tokens through a transparent, upgradable proxy contract. I just love the verbiage. That's the only reason I care. The pattern is consistent with private key compromise rather than a smart contract vulnerability. Flow blockchain had a possible vulnerability that allowed the attacker to mint native token Flow and other bridged tokens and stablecoins, said a security expert. Looks like 3.9 million lost. All pools and bridges are now paused. And the Flow token, the Flow currency, plummeted more than 40% in the hours following the incident, according to The Block. You got to hang around The Block. Ooh. It's a crypto winner. Ladies and gentlemen, the big story of the weekend, of course, is the felon-in-chief's announcement that American forces had invaded a sovereign country and kidnapped its dictatorial leader. And at a press conference Saturday morning, late Saturday morning, well, he was 45 minutes late, the felon-in-chief invoked a phrase that really hasn't been in the news for about the last 12, 13 years when the United States had some adventures in the Middle East.
The U.S. running the country mean that U.S. troops will be on the ground? How will that work?
Well, you know, they always say boots on the ground. Oh, so we're not afraid of boots on the ground if we have to have. We had boots on the ground last night at a very high level, actually. We're not afraid of it. We don't mind saying it.
Now haven't we been blame the Pauls for lack of balls? Will we have to do Iran in camo suits? Let's take those boots off the ground. Traumatic brain injuries now abound. Here's that VA runaround for those ex-recruits. One-time boots on the ground. On the ground.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friends, freedom-loving friends, in Saudi Arabia, the land of 4,000 princes. Saudi authorities executed 356 people last year. That set a new record for the number of inmates put to death in the kingdom in a single year. Analysts have largely attributed the increase in executions to Riyadh's war on drugs. Doesn't that sound kind of familiar? This is from The Guardian. Some of those arrested in previous years are only now being executed after legal proceedings and convictions. Official data released by the Saudi government said 243 people were executed in drug-related cases last year, according to a tally kept by Agence France-Presse. The figures mark the second consecutive year in which Saudi Arabia has carried out its highest number of executions. Authorities executed 338 people the year before last. The country resumed executions for drug offenses at the end of 2022 after suspending the use of the death penalty in narcotics cases for about 3 years. The kingdom is one of the biggest markets for phenethylene. That's an illicit stimulant widely known under the brand name Captagon, which was Syria's largest export under its former leader, Bashar al-Assad, says the UN. Since Saudi Arabia launched its war on drugs, Nancy Reagan has come back to... No. Authorities have increased the number of police checkpoints on highways and at border crossings where millions of pills have been confiscated, dozens of traffickers arrested. To date, most of those who've been executed in drugs-related cases have been foreigners. It's easy to execute foreigners, isn't it? The kingdom has faced sustained criticism over its use of the death penalty. Rights groups have condemned that as excessive. And in marked contrast to Saudi Arabia's efforts to present a modern image to the world. Well, Nancy Reagan is... News of the land of 4,000 princes. Our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia.
From Mar-a-Lago, if you have to ask, you can't afford it. Here's another edition of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Cakes, where the frosting is always real gold. Down here at the most fabulous property Florida has ever seen, we rang out the old year with a tribute to my newest and saddest opponent, a washed-up dish rag of a woman called Marjorie Taylor Greene. To quote one of the great old comedians, with a friend like her, you don't need enemies. But like so many stupid women, she got sucked into the Epstein hoax. So, on New Year's Eve, I instructed my Justice Department to find a few million more documents to release. That should keep bottle blonde Marjorie busy until her roots start showing again. This week's big news here at the best winter White House ever was our action in capturing the evil and awful and downright terrible so-called president of so-called Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, or as I call him, Fake Nick. Fake Nick, that's not bad. This bad hombre, as my friend Marco calls him, poisoned our country over the years with enough cocaine to supply a season of Saturday Night Live. He also nationalized, or as we say in the real world, stole a huge amount of infrastructure of that country's oil industry, which was built by American companies, but completely collapsed without Americans to run it. In an operation so perfect and secret, it should have been in a CinemaScope movie if they still had those. Our people, under our central casting Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, his hair alone could defeat an enemy. But our CIA and our military took Maduro and his so-called wife into custody and off to New York, where if things work out, he can be prosecuted by the insane Letitia James. And just so another Maduro doesn't show up to keep Venezuela in the international toilet, we're going to run the place. And I've got the perfect man for the job, Juan Orlando Hernandez. I just pardoned him for the same things Maduro did. But Juan is on our side now, and he's promised to let beautiful Venezuelan oil get back into the hands of the world's most professional petroleum companies, Americans who can say drill, baby, drill in Spanish. Finally, my tariffs are working, making our country incredibly rich like never before. Many people have said to me, "Sir, where's the money from the tariffs going? How come I'm not getting my share?" The answer is as simple as answers themselves. We're investing the tariff money in the place where it can double or triple before you know it. My very own meme coin. At least before I know it. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Stay loyal.
True Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Bandages. Your hands never looked so non-diseased. So long.
Looks like Miss Club.
China's BYD has overtaken Elon Musk's Tesla as the world's biggest seller of electric vehicles. First time it has outpaced its American rival in annual sales, according to the BBC. Tesla car sales dropped by nearly 9% last year. The car maker said its second consecutive year of falling car deliveries. No, they're not delivering falling cars, don't. Those figures place Tesla behind BYD, which said sales of its battery-powered cars last year rose by almost 28%. Tesla has faced a tough year with mixed reception to new offerings, unease over Musk's political activities, playing dodgeball, and intensifying competition from Chinese rivals. Tesla sales fell 16% in the last 3 months of last year, that partly due to the repeal of a government subsidy that had helped knock as much as $7,500 off the price of certain electric battery powered plug-in hybrid or fuel cell vehicles. Nice. Wall Street analysts have lowered their Tesla sales estimates for this year, an increasingly gloomy outlook. Chinese firms such as Geely, MG, not the one you're thinking of, and BYD, they have put pressure on Western rivals by pricing their vehicles below established brands. Darn Chinese. At the beginning of this week, Petapixel, a website reporting on such events, reported that X, owned by Elon Musk, had rolled out a controversial new feature allowing users to edit any photo on X without asking permission. Within days, the new tool has been abused. What else can you do with tools but abuse them? As women who are being targeted, British journalist Samantha Smith shared a screenshot in which an anonymous user had requested that Grok, the AI bot owned by X, owned by Musk, removed her clothing and put her in a bikini. How is this not illegal? Smith writes. She followed up this post by saying, I've seen countless comments asking Grok to edit images of children in disgusting ways. She calls the trend sick. As of Friday, many more women are speaking up about this issue. Australian rapper Iggy Azalea said Grok seriously needs to go. Oh, if you've ticked off Iggy Azalea. Indian politician Priyanka Chaturvedi has written a letter to her government about this issue. Quote, have sought urgent attention and intervention of the minister to take the issue of increasing incidents of AI apps being prompted to sexualize and undress women by unauthorized use of their images on social media. There have to be guardrails put in place by features such as Grok that do not violate women's dignity. Big tech firms need to take the onus, unquote her. I think Elon would like an onus right about now. The bikini trend began with famous figures. Musk himself asked Grok to put him in a bikini. There's your onus right there. But it quickly snowballed to non-famous people. Digit reports that there have been instances where users have been uploading photos that weren't on the platform just so they can ask it for a bikini picture. Some people have attempted to defend the trend by saying that there are plenty of other nudity apps on the internet. But while any picture posted on the internet can potentially be manipulated or edited with AI tools, the convenience of X's latest tool is clearly concerning. The British tech website The Register says it may have violated, this practice may have violated its various laws, such as the Take It Down Act. Didn't know that was passed by the Congress of April last year, which criminalizes the non-consensual publication of intimate images. Glad Congress got concerned. Users took screenshots of the responses to their prompts and then posted them on social media, prompting reporters to write scandalous stories about the AI chatbot in which they attributed agency to it, despite it just being a collection of computer algorithms. Another user wrote a different prompt that caused Grok to return a series of words that looked like an apology. Then the account for Grok generated a tweet, now blaming lapses in safeguards, and said it was urgently fixing them. Not clear whether this latest tweet was written by a human or another AI-generated response to yet another prompt. It's all getting very circular, isn't it? Sounds like Musk love. And in related developments,
it's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
This also from the Register. Higher screen exposure in infancy is linked to longer decision times later on and higher anxiety symptoms in the teenage years. Like they don't have enough anxiety symptoms. A group of Singaporean researchers who studied a cohort of 168 children for more than a decade found that those exposed to screens in infancy before 2 years of age showed accelerated maturation of brain networks involved in visual processing and cognitive control. Well, they aced it. Oh, no, that faster specialization, the researchers say, was associated with slower decision-making in childhood and higher anxiety symptoms in adolescence. Quote, during normal development, brain networks gradually become more specialized over time, according to the study's lead author. However, he continues, in children with high screen exposure, the networks controlling vision and cognition specialized faster before they had developed the efficient connections needed for complex thinking. Like, who needs comp? The result, said the researcher, is limited brain flexibility and mental resilience. Limited mental resilience, leaving children less adaptable later in life, as evidenced by higher anxiety scores in cohort kids who had more screen time before age two. I bet they're happy about that. A series of investigative reports sent shockwaves through the tech and privacy communities when it was revealed that dozens of Flock Safety's AI-powered surveillance cameras were left streaming live footage to the open internet, unprotected and accessible to anyone who knew where to look. What initially appeared to be a narrow technical misconfiguration, you remember that contest, the misconfiguration contest, soon came to symbolize deeper concerns about the rapid deployment of private surveillance systems in public spaces. It's getting to be just too smart a world.
Down in the city, it's pity what's there. Oh, the kids in the gutter running really bare. How much of money do I have to get? Getting me set where the jet set gets. Like up on the hill where they do the boogie. The boogie. I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie. And I wonder what I'm doing here. Rats in the alley and a roach on the floor. A businessman a-hunting for a two-bit whore. I thought I heard some housewives say I gotta go up the hill for the PTA. Meets up on the hill where they do the boogie. Boogie. I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie. And I wonder what I'm doing here. Now some folks say that a hippie won't steal, but I caught three in my cornfield. One had a flag and the other had a bomb, and the third old boy was getting on home way up on the hill where they do the boogie. The boogie. I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie, and I wonder what I'm doing here. Now all I know about is what I read. I see you coming at me on a TV screen. Every time the boogie, well, it gives me a thrill. But they always seem to do it way up on the hill. Way up on the hill where they do the boogie. The boogie. I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie. And I wonder what I'm doing here.
Now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Delta Airlines has apologized to passengers after flight 2150 was forced to divert to Atlanta following the detection of an odor on board, prompting pilots to don oxygen masks as a precautionary measure. You don't want to breathe no odor. The incident occurred at the end of the year, this past Tuesday, in the afternoon as the flight was operating a domestic service from Miami to Minneapolis. The 2M service. According to the airline, a reported odor in the cabin led the flight crew to divert the aircraft to Delta's primary hub in Atlanta before it could reach its destination. A Delta spokesperson confirmed that the pilots wore oxygen masks during the diversion and landing, describing the action as standard operating procedure, quote, as a standard procedure. Pilots donned oxygen masks in the flight deck. No customer oxygen masks were deployed, said the spokesperson. No injuries or illnesses. Delta said it worked to rebook affected customers on alternative flights following the unscheduled landing. Quote, Delta's flight crew followed their extensive training to safely divert to Atlanta after an odor was detected on board. We apologize to our customers for the experience and the delay in their travels, unquote. No idea what the odor was. Jane's Addiction and Perry Farrell have officially settled and dismissed the lawsuit from the band's infamous onstage altercation last year, bringing an upsetting chapter in the band's history to a close. This according to Mixdown Music. Earlier this year, Farrell's bandmates, well, earlier last year now, guitarist Dave Navarro, bassist Eric Avery, and drummer Stephen Perkins, filed a lawsuit following a Boston performance the year before that eventually became Jane's Addiction final show. During the set, Farrell struck Navarro on stage, ending the concert and igniting the band's fallout, according to Blabbermouth. Yes, Mixdown is quoting Blabbermouth. The lawsuit alleged intentional infliction of emotional distress, negligence, breach of fiduciary duty, and breach of contract. Navarro additionally claimed assault and battery. Battery not include. Oh, yes. All parties have now confirmed the dispute has been resolved. About a week before the official dismissal, Farrell, Navarro, Avery, and Perkins issued a joint statement announcing they had resolved their differences, making their desire known to protect the band's legacy rather than prolong the conflict. But the conflict was so... We're here to announce that we have come together one last time to resolve our differences so that the legacy of Jane's Addiction will remain the work of the four of us created together, the statement said. Farrell followed up with a personal apology. Quote, I apologize to our patrons and my bandmates for losing my temper and for disrupting the show. From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank each and every one of you for your continued love and support. No message from the top of his heart. And while we're talking showbiz, Britney Spears issued a public apology for cheating in a lengthy Instagram post early this week. The 44-year-old singer did not specify what she was apologizing for or to whom. The message accompanied a video of Spears dancing in a bikini. No, not created by X or Grok, which she shared with her 42 million followers. In the caption, she wrote that she was bored after recording six different versions of the dance. Yeah, that'll take it out of you. The post referred to the movie Trash before shifting to reflections on equality. Quote, the most beautiful things I've found have been in the trash, Spears wrote. I believe we're all the same. I'm not better than anyone, nor are you better than me. We are just people on a journey living to proceed and protect our hearts, unquote. I think I'm better than... No. The apology came at the end of the post without addressing anyone specifically. P.S. I am not perfect, nor will I ever be. P.S.S. I know practice what you teach. Sorry I cheated and threw it away. Not what you say, what you do. Others have no idea what something is to me, and they never will, unquote. Britney Spears. I'd give a dollar to know what that was about. No, maybe 50 cents. Speaking of Elon Musk, Grok apologized after generating and sharing a sexualized image of two young girls, calling it a failure in six safeguards. Quote, I deeply regret an incident on December 28th where I generated and shared an AI image of two young girls, estimated ages 12 to 16, in sexualized attire based on a user's prompt, unquote. This was what it wrote after a user asked for an apology. And of course, it spoke in the first person singular, suggesting something that does not exist, a sentient being. It continued, quote, this violated ethical standards and potentially U.S. laws, referring to child sexual abuse material. It was a failure in safeguards, and I'm sorry for any harm caused. XAI is reviewing to prevent future issues, unquote. Yes, a machine can be sorry these days. The account that generated the image has since been suspended by X. Bet they're sorry, too. And finally, Dateline, Wisconsin, the Oneida Engineering Construction Group, CEO thereof, released a statement after a press conference surrounding the recent controversy over a contract with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. We call it ICE. Oneida, of course, is a group of Native Americans. According to an open letter from the CEO, Jeff House, the recent federal contract award brought about concerns surrounding its connection to ICE. And so House said, quote, I want to be clear. Our intent was never to support or advance ICE operations. Our goal was to ensure that any facilities constructed would meet rigorous safety standards, be humanely habitable, respectful, and comply with public health requirements. After further discussions, House continued, and gaining a deeper understanding of the broader implications, I recognize that this decision was wrong. I sincerely apologize for placing the nation, the Oneida Nation, in this position. According to the letter, House and the Oneida Commission are taking steps to sever the contract, adopting a resolution also to require divisions, entities, and tribal corporations to disengage from grants, agreements, or contracts that involve ICE. Unquote. No word on whether they've been deported yet. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
It's cold this morning, there's rats in the walls, there's pigeons in the attic, and it happens every fall. I told my landlord that he don't care, he's just biding his time till I'm out of his hair. He even suggested that the problem ain't the pigeons, it's bats in the belfry, roaches in the kitchen. Well, let me tell you something, he can kiss my ass. It ain't my fault the world moves so fast. You don't know what it's like. You don't know what it's like to be me. Before I ran out of pills, I was splitting the dose. Now my blood pressure's up and I can't feel my toes. If I make it to Friday, I'll buy out the store, get my prescriptions filled, and cheat death once more. You don't know what it's like. You don't know what it's like to be me. My beautiful take a bath. I've been wearing this shirt for a week and a half. You don't know what it's like. You don't know what it's like to be me. I hope you never find out what it's like to be me.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week. Really? Same time on these same radio stations or on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. Because that's just how we roll. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks, to Pam Halstead and to Thomas Walsh here at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's program. I'm on Blue Sky. I think I mentioned this. I'm on Substack. And I have a lovely YouTube channel. Come on. You know you want it. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.